You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you very much for all the offers for the charity auction. Shut up, whoever you are, please. So, thank you so much for the offers. The auction ends tonight, I think, at midnight, something like that. No. Ah. Okay. It ends at 8:30, right before dinner. We have two special items that we will auction live right after the awards, because they are very special. I will show you when it's the right moment. Okay, so, and now that I think that's all I had to say, okay? So it's with really great pleasure that we are going to have here for the third time in DeepCon, but the first time in Eurocon. I know that Eurocon are not used to having actors as guests, because usually they charge a lot of money, but some of them are really, really lovely, and you'll see that my dear friend Chase is one of them. Ladies and gentlemen, Chase Masterson!
Flora, you are so amazing. Thank you so much. Everybody give it up for Flora Staliano. And DeepCon and Eurocon, thank you all so much for being here, and thank you for having me. How are you?
Great.
I'm so happy and so honored to be here, especially in that it is my third time, but I see this truly as seeing old friends and making new friends, and it's just always a wonderful experience. And I know that there are others who have been back here. It's wonderful to see you, Ian MacDonald, and to have you here, and to get to know you and Enid. And are you all having a good time? Good. I'm so glad. Well, it's no secret that I love coming to conventions. I adore discussing these stories and the heart of these stories and all that they mean to the world. And I love meeting the people who really make them possible, which is you guys. And when I come to a convention, I'm often reminded of my very first convention. Can I tell you about it? Okay, so for reasons I'll tell you later, I had wanted to be on this show for a very long time. It was the one show that I hoped and prayed to be on, Deep Space Nine. So I finally got on the show, and I was on my way to my first convention. And you know those days that we all have when you just shower and you throw in your sweats and you've got wet hair and you just run out the door and you think it's okay because I won't see anybody? And that's the day you see everybody, right? Everyone's all of a sudden there. You run into everyone you know. Your boss, your ex-boyfriend, the guy you'd like to date, everyone's there. Hi. I was having one of those days on a little bit of a larger level. I got to LAX, Los Angeles Airport, on the way to this convention, and I had a box of pictures in the box. And on the outside of the box, there was a photo of what's inside the box, and it's all the Ferengi holding Leeta up, kind of Betty Grable style. And so I'm checking the box of pictures in, and the guy behind the counter is taking the box of pictures, and he looks at me, and he looks at the picture on the box, and he looks back at me again, and he says, "Excuse me, are you on Deep Space Nine?" And I got all excited to be recognized because it's my first convention. I'm going. I'm in the game. And I said, "Yes." And he points to the picture on the box and he said, "Oh, you look good on TV." So I said, "Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Thank you." The people behind me start whispering. They're whispering, "Star Trek, Star Trek. I think she's on Star Trek. Let's ask her." "Excuse me, miss. Are you on Deep Space Nine?" And I get all excited to be recognized, and I said, "Yes." And they point to the picture on the box, and they said, "Oh, are you inside one of those Ferengi heads?" And I said, no, I'm the girl. "But you love Leeta, right?"
Yeah.
Right. I was having an interesting day the very first time I did an episode of Deep Space Nine. And I'll take you a little bit back to why I wanted to be on this show. All in one story. So I was in an acting class of 10 people in a city of 12 million people in Los Angeles, where most of them are actors. 10 of those people were Jonathan Del Arco, who played Hugh the Borg on Next Generation, Garrett from Voyager, and me. The class was taught by Corey Allen, an amazing, wonderful actor who had been with James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause, and he was directing quite a lot of episodes of television, and he directed Star Trek as well. So it was really interesting to have this conglomeration of people in one small class. This was before either Garrett or I were on the show, but Jonathan had already done Next Generation. And Jonathan would come to these classes on Monday nights, and he would talk about how he had just gone to a convention the weekend before. And he would talk about the fact that he got to meet the people that love the show and talk about these incredible stories and the travel. That was so wonderful. And in fact, is Catalina here? Catalina, I remember Jonathan saying how he had gotten to go to Sweden. And I was so taken by this incredible, gifts and blessings of being on this show that I thought, that's the show I want to be on. And so I made it a point to meet the casting directors. In Los Angeles, you have these showcases where you can go and pay $25 to meet a casting director. And you can do your work for them, do a scene for them, and if they like you, they'll call you in for an audition. Well, I was too poor to pay $25 on any kind of a regular basis to meet these casting people. So I said to the casting showcase managers, if you let me take your classes, I will work for you and bring in other people and make sure they take your classes and pay for them. So good. So I was given a limited number of classes, and the main person I wanted to meet was Ron Surma, who is the casting director for Star Trek. So I met the casting director, and I went and I auditioned for the role of Marta. Marta was Jake's girlfriend, Jake Sisko's girlfriend in the second season. And I really loved this role because she was a Bajoran Dabo girl. And I thought, what an interesting combination. Bajorans being spiritual, Dabo girls being fun. I could relate to both. And I thought, that's my role. That's it. And I worked really hard on it. And I rehearsed with people. I rehearsed with Jonathan, actually. And I got down to the final two. And in Hollywood, you can work so hard and go back and back and back to meet the casting directors and the producers and still not get it. So this was quite a long process. And getting down to the final two, I was told that they cast the other girl because it was for the role of Jake's girlfriend. And Jake was 16, and she's 19, and I'm not. And so I thought, oh, how close and yet so far away. And then I got the word that they wrote the role of Lita for me, based on that audition. So it was really nice. And actually, this reminds me of your story, Eric. You can see how, for those of you who were with us for Eric's talk, you had a very long, very filled with perseverance road to your success. And every step of the way was, you know, at first very small, very incremental. It required a lot of persistence, a lot of patience, a lot of faith in yourself, and a lot of passion, just with your eyes on the prize of what you want to do, right? And I think it's often the same for all of us, that we have these things in life that we want to do, and we can only imagine that faraway goal, but somehow if we keep working on it, chances are that the process will fill our lives, for one thing, and the process, the road, is often the richest part of the journey. And also, if we have patience and self-compassion and persistence, we can get where we're going, right? Where we want to go. So here I was. I was finally where I want to go. I was on Deep Space Nine, and they wrote this role with one episode. So it was that episode where Lita was meeting Dr. Bashir. Do you remember this? The Explorer. And so it was just that one episode. It was four lines, but I was so excited. And I was in the hair trailer. This is my first day on the show. I was in the hair trailer, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning, which is the time I usually was called. And Avery Brooks was also in the hair trailer. What he was doing in the hair trailer, I don't know. Buffing, plucking, I don't want to think about it. But anyway, so Avery's over there in the hair trailer, and I am getting ready to go get into makeup, and I am so excited, I'm a little too perky. And I say to my hairdresser, okay, thank you so much for rolling my hair. I'm so excited. I'm going to go get my makeup put on, and I'm going to come back, and you can unroll my hair, and I'm going to put my costume on, and I'm so excited. I'm going to be on the show. Bye. Bye, Mr. Brooks. And I start to leave, and he says, goodbye, Kathy. And I said, oh, no, I'm not Kathy. My name's Chase Masterson. I met you when I auditioned for the role of Marta, which I didn't get, but I got the role of Lita, so it's okay, and I'm so excited to be on the show, and you're the star. Just like that. And he said, see you later, Kathy. And I said, no, I'm not Kathy. I'm Chase Masterson. I play the role of Lita. I'm not Kathy. I've never even played a Kathy. And he took one long, hard Avery Brooks look at me. And he said, Nordic track. Okay. I had done a Nordic track infomercial years before, in secret. And now, my first day on the show, Avery Brooks, the star, is reminding me of it. How embarrassing, right? Well, I took one long, hard Chase Masterson look at him, and I said, Avery, I got paid for doing it. What's your excuse for watching it? Thank you. I mean, get a life, right? But he was really nice to me after that. And I'm grateful that the producers were nice to me. After that, I ended up doing 5 seasons of the show, and that was also a blessing, every single episode, because the recurring characters never had a contract, so they could have killed us off at any time. So, you know, unlike the series regulars who are guaranteed a certain amount of episodes and money, it was always a surprise and always wonderful when we got asked back for another episode, because we, partly because we loved doing the show and partly because we knew we were doing something right, because they didn't have to. So, it was wonderful having, am I talking too fast? Okay. All right, thank you. It was wonderful having the arc of Lita be such that it was, with the beginning of Lita as a lowly Dabo girl, someone who turned out to be compassionate. Basically, let's face facts, not just a push-up bra. Dabo girls were, as you probably know, known for doing extra work on the side of the Dabo table. They were not necessarily the most respected position at all. And for Lita to be different was really a nice comment on that, on not stereotyping people simply because of their job, but Lita, getting to know Lita and seeing that she possessed a humanity and an understanding, compassion, and really, I think, a cleverness that was written into the character from the very first episode. The fact that I didn't go up to Dr. Bashir and say, hey, baby, but it was more like, I'd like to meet you. So I had a really good time with doing that. And then, obviously, for Lita to be able to go on from dating the cute British doctor to really falling in love with the guy that was only pretty on the inside. I think that's a very Star Trek message. Rom was the little runt brother who was vilified, who was forgotten, he was overlooked, he was made fun of, marginalized in every possible way. And Rom found his courage in the episode in the third season, the Bar Association, where he stood up for his rights and for the rights of the people in the bar and formed a Ferengi union, basically, which I think is such a wonderful concept and thing to do, especially considering it was against his brother. It was against everything that was status quo. They stood up and it made a difference for everyone. And that's, I think, when Lita started to fall in love with Rom, because she saw that he stood for things that mattered, that were important, that helped people. And so it was interesting. Ira Bear told us in the fifth season, he said that's where they started putting Lita and Rom together, which was, you know, the seed of that, the little beginnings of that was in that episode, Bar Association. He told us in the fifth season that he wanted Lita and Rom to be the example of a happy couple on television. And we were really struck by that. Then he said, think about it. There really aren't any happy couples on television. And that was during the day of, that was, you know, Married with Children and all these other couples and stories that revolve around the bickering, the strife, the unhappiness, the cheating, the addiction, alcoholism, the breakups, all of the things that I guess that television producers and writers thought were what would make a couple interesting. But Ira said, I want to prove that a couple can be happy and still interesting, which I absolutely loved. I also loved that Lita and Rom got together because there were more fun storylines. I think Lita and Dr. Bashir were kind of like the Barbie and Ken of Star Trek, right? But Lita and Rom were like the Lucy and Ricky, right? Got some explaining to do. We had a really good time with all of those episodes, and it was just wonderful having that breadth of storyline to accompany us. And I think that's partly why I'm here today, because I have the privilege of having a storyline on Star Trek about something that we can all relate to, about both Lita and Ram being people who were overlooked and underestimated. And isn't that part of the human condition? Don't we all at some point feel underestimated and feel like, when will they see who I really am? When will they see the power that I have inside me? When will I be appreciated for who I am? And it was wonderful that we could show that, yes, it does happen, that people can grow into a place or can be brought into a place where we're seen and appreciated and find love in unexpected ways. So we had a really good time with that. I have all sorts of stories I could tell you if you like, or I could wait for the Q&A and do that kind of thing, but after Star Trek, okay. About other projects or? Oh, sure. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, there's a lot of fun jobs. So one of the things that was the upside of not having a contract, of course everyone would like a contract, but not having a contract, we were free to do all sorts of other work, to audition and get cast in other projects. So during that period of time, I did, someone earlier today mentioned Sliders, that they're doing a rewatch of Sliders, and I went and did one episode on that as a guest star, and I played Wade's sister. I did ER. It's so funny. This episode of ER that I did, I was going to turn down the audition because I didn't think the role was right for me. I thought, why are they even calling me in? I'm not going to get this. They're going to hire that girl, and I picture this other girl who's way more everything than I am. And I had a pretty good booking ratio. I had a pretty good success rate at that time, and I didn't want to ruin it. But I went and auditioned, and I got it. And this episode ended up being watched by more people than any episodic television episode in history. It broke all records. It was aired, I think, on Thanksgiving night of whatever year that was. Let's not think about that. And it broke all television records in history. And then they used my episode when they nominated ER for the Emmy for Best Dramatic Narrative Series that year, and they chose my episode as the example episode, and they showed parts of my scenes on the Emmy broadcast on the night that it won. And I got a call from my manager, and she said, "You were just on the Emmys." I was like, "What?" I was at a convention somewhere in the Midwest somewhere, and I was like, "What?" Sleeping. She's like, "Yeah, you were just on the Emmys." So little tiny fun little career things like that have been really nice along the way. One of those things that were more recent is getting to do Doctor Who Big Finish. Are you familiar with that? Well, I was at a convention in 2012 at a particularly difficult time in my life, but I scraped it together and I went to this convention, and I had a friend say, do you know Big Finish? And I said, I didn't have any idea what it was, but I learned that they're incredibly popular stories that really carried the flag of Doctor Who during the dark years when there was no Doctor Who television. And Big Finish is made by this wonderful, passionate group of storytellers, and their motto is, "We love story." They say it like that too. "We love story." Kind of like that. And what I love about Big Finish is that they have the ability to create incredible worlds and big epic adventures for a reasonable price because they're only audio. And without the visual, they can tell these stories, and we obviously, we do the video, we do the visuals in our minds. So it's a wonderfully viable and creative way of creating more good science fiction. So they cast me as Vienna Salvatore. Can I say that right? Vienna Salvatore. And she is this obviously very Italian mercenary assassin with a heart of gold. Vienna, they term her as impossibly glamorous, and she has a big sense of fun, but she's also an assassin. But she's a good assassin in that if she finds out that she's sent to kill the good guy, she'll turn it around and kill the bad guy. But interestingly, without standard methods of violence, she usually finds a way for the bad guy to take himself down. Through his own means, she finds a way to turn his own means around on him. And they find amazing ways to do this that aren't repetitive. We did 4 seasons of Vienna. And I love the storylines that they put. First of all, we did the original, the pilot of Vienna was Vienna as the nemesis of Sylvester McCoy, the 7th Doctor. Do we love Sylvester? Adore Sylvester. I say he's my Clark Gable. He's so fun. If you don't know Sylvester McCoy, he's about this tall. And he's about 85 or something. He worked in vaudeville, and he was the 7th Doctor Who. And it was a really fun way to introduce this character, Vienna. And now, after doing 4 seasons, they've put Vienna in other areas of Big Finish, working with Lisa, Jago and Lightfoot, my brain, the things are failing me here, but there's other shows that they put Vienna into, and the most recent one is playing opposite Eric Roberts, who is returning as the Master. And so it's fun. I think the storylines are wonderful in Vienna because we talk about the fact, we finally learn that Vienna is a mercenary assassin because she was a child soldier. And we talk a lot about the fact that that happens, that children are made to be soldiers in different countries, in different times. And there are other episodes about the falseness of many religions and religious people, the hypocrisy, and we talk about the also hypocrisy and falseness of the beauty industry and how little it means and things that happen there. And Vienna's always exposing something. So anyway, it's a lot of fun. But it basically is all because of Star Trek. It's all because of you guys and our wonderfully faithful science fiction audience, which I'm so grateful for. I can tell you about my favorite episode of Deep Space Nine, if you'd like. Okay. So, my favorite episode that I did, there are many great memories with so many episodes. Obviously, one episode would be Teaching Quark How to Be a Woman. Doesn't get any better than that, right? We had a lot of fun. The Risa episode, different episodes were lots of fun. But my favorite episode was Dr. Bashir, I presume, because I got to work with the inimitable Bob Picardo. We love Bob Picardo, right? Do we love him? So, as you may recall, Bob Picardo came over from Voyager because there was an issue with Dr. Bashir and him being genetically enhanced. So Dr. Zimmerman, played by Bob Picardo, comes over to Deep Space Nine in order to deal with all that, and then he meets Lita, and Lita and he form a little friendship. And all of this time, Lita is pining away for Rom, but Rom will not profess his love. I had already broken up with Dr. Bashir. I didn't go just from one to the other. I made my choice. I was like, nope. Not you. And I was holding out for the man I loved, Rom. Well, Rom would not profess his love, so I'm going to go off off Deep Space Nine because Dr. Zimmerman has invited me to go with him, and I'll have my own cafe on this other planet. So I'm going off with Dr. Zimmerman, never to see Deep Space Nine again. We're leaving, and I hear this voice wailing in the distance. Leda! Wait!
Leda! Wait!
And Bob Picardo says, "We heard you the first time." And Rom says,
"Leda, I love you."
And I say, "Oh, Rom," as I always said, "Oh, Rom. And we're going to live happily ever after," which is great for us. But it's not great for poor Bob Picardo, because not only does he not get the girl, he doesn't get an exit line. And what is Bob Picardo going to do? Just give us the scene and fade off into the scenery and let us be the focus? No, not Bob Picardo. Bob Picardo went where no actor has ever gone before. He asked for an additional line. Now, on Star Trek, there are no additional lines. And this is because the writers are so damn good. They have already written the script as good as it could ever be. So don't even ask. But Bob asked, because he's Bob Picardo. Question went all the way up through all six offices, and it came back down fairly quickly, within hours. And they said, "All right, Bob, you can have another line. What would you like to say?" And he said, "Let me try a few things." So here we are, as Rom and I are kissing. Rom is getting his orange makeup all over me. Bob Picardo sees this woman going off onto this shuttlecraft where he and Leda were going to go. And he sees this woman, and he follows her saying, "Excuse me, miss, have you heard about my work with Kama Sutra?" Which we all thought was really funny. And that's the scene that aired. The take that he did first, which I thought was hilarious and I thought they should have used, is as Rom and I are kissing, he sees this alien woman going off into the shuttlecraft, and he says, "Excuse me, miss, have you heard about my work on Star Trek Voyager?" So, yeah, he's nuts. He's nuts. Did you see the Deep Space Nine documentary? What We Left Behind? Wasn't that beautiful? Yes. Oh, good. Oh, I think I heard about that. So they showed it here. Oh, wonderful. Oh, wow. Yeah, I thought he did an absolutely stellar job with it. Truly, really beautiful. Ira Behr, along with Michael Piller, God bless him, Ira really was so much the heart and soul of Deep Space Nine, and it was because of Michael's decision early on to serialize the show. Michael Piller was such an important and well-respected writer, and his making the risky decision to serialize the show, meaning, as you probably know, to make one episode follow the other, and you pretty much had to watch one in order to understand the next, and the next, and the next. This is difficult enough now, in the age of binge watching, it's obviously done a lot, but to have that kind of commitment to that kind of storytelling back when there was barely any, even TiVo, I mean, it was really, you had to sit there with your VCR and turn it on the moment, and you know, or program it if you could, in order to see an episode if you couldn't watch it live in its first run. And many people couldn't because it was a syndicated show, so it was on whenever the local station felt like putting it on. So it could be on at 1 o'clock in the morning. I have a lot of people tell us, you know, we can't stay up that late. It's just on the wrong time. So this decision to serialize the show was such a risky one and such an important one. And because, I believe it's because Michael Piller stuck to his guns and went up against the network and went up against, you know, the Carrie McCluggage and all these people that were in charge, and they said, no, this is the way this story needs to be told. So Deep Space Nine was not about us boldly going into other universes or onto other planets. Deep Space Nine was about us boldly going into our relationships, into our own psyches, into the understanding of what was between us, what was within us. And we are often told that Deep Space Nine is the favorite of all of the Star Treks. It's DeepCon, not VoyCon. I fully believe that's why, because they gave us room for the characters to grow. You didn't have to start from the beginning at each episode and trivialize the stories. You could get attached to characters, and their lives mattered. And so we were able to tell these incredible stories, the themes that Deep Space Nine had of the cost of war and the need, the importance of peace, and the difficulty in getting it, and warring factions, and what drives people to do things they do, and how important it is to stand up for what you believe in, and risk, and friendship, and fun, and a sense of fun. And I think that's very much where the Ferengi came in, because we got to be the lighthearted element to all of those heavy stories, and yet, the Ferengi too. We had our own gravitas. I count myself as an honorary Ferengi. There were stories that also mattered, even in the playful way that we came to life on the show. So it was an incredible honor to have that kind of, as I said, you know, when back in that. Acting class of 10 people in a city of 12 million people. Star Trek has actually, I've never said it this way before, but Star Trek has, for me, been all that I dreamed it would be when I was sitting there on the floor of that acting class, learning to breathe deeply, or whatever you learn in those acting classes, really learning to be comfortable with who you are and your place within a story, a character. All of the things that I heard Jonathan Del Arco say that he got from this show came true for me. And I'm extremely grateful. It's out of that gratitude that in 2013 I founded Pop Culture Hero Coalition. And you might have heard about this charity. Flora very generously has put together a panel for us tomorrow at 11:30, right? Yes. With Licia from the Italian Space Agency. Writer and astrophysician, right. And she did a panel earlier today. And so Licia and Flora and I will get to discuss both Pop Culture Hero Coalition and the underlying reasons for it. So Pop Culture Hero Coalition is the first ever nonprofit organization to teach mental health and social emotional learning, which leads to ending bullying, racism, misogyny, LGBTQI+ bullying, cyberbullying, and other forms of injustice. So we use these stories from Star Trek, Harry Potter, The Avengers, Wonder Woman. We use these stories that kids and adults love to teach these incredibly important, life-affirming, transformational ideals and lessons. And I'm grateful to say that I've been able to enlist an incredible team of psychologists and veteran educators in order to create a curriculum. So I did a TED Talk about this, if anybody's interested in watching it. I'm proud of my TED Talk, I'm grateful for it. It was in 2019, and it was in Vienna, Austria. And I was able to explain the foundational reasons of why I founded the coalition, of some difficult things that happened to me, and then out of that, to find a way to heal from my own pain and or begin to, and help make the world better. Because that's why we love these stories. They're so transformational. There's so much heart and soul in them. And so I thought, let's make that official, right? We learn inclusion. We learn how important it is to stand up for each other. And as Eric said in his talk, you know, the diversity that's in Star Trek and we see in our own lives if we only will look around and have the energy, have the strength, have the fortitude to support inclusion and diversity in the world in every possible way, and to support human rights. So we teach kids about this. It's it's apparent that not everyone learns this stuff at home. And so we teach these things in a fun way, but not only, and including that, but also resilience and healthy identity, and for each child to be proud of who they are. And so this work goes from K through 12th grades, so all throughout school. We were only, scratch all that I just said, never mind that. We hadn't done that yet. We were just doing this work at Comic-Cons, and I had met, I'll tell you how I found it. I guess I have time, right? Okay. So I had been mentoring men and women coming out of gangs at a place called Homeboy Industries, and I alluded to going through some very difficult things in my own life that were shattering, and I was very deeply upset for quite a while. And a good friend of mine, Judith, said, if you want to feel better, go help some people whose life is worse than yours. And I have a lot of blessing in my life, but the only people I could think of who were as angry as me were gang members. And so in an interesting twist of fate, I was working with a friend of mine who had a self-help book. And I said to him, well, if you want to know if your book works, your self-help theories, and it was a wonderful book, actually, I said, let's go see and bring it to people, you know, who will tell us if it works or not. This book was called Finding Your Path Through Life. It was my friend Richard Blacker, a wonderful book. And so we went to work with these Crips and Bloods, basically, with heavy, heavy-duty gang members in downtown Los Angeles from places like Compton and South Central Los Angeles, and some very heavy people who had just come out of prison, every single one of them come out of prison, and Homeboy helps rehabilitate them. And I talked to one of them who was, this is really down a rabbit hole, but if you're with me, I never asked him what they did to get into prison. I figure that's past and it's none of my business. But I did ask one of them, what got you started into this life of pain? And he said that he was bullied on the playground. His name is Vance. I call him Ad Vance because he's made so many wonderful changes. His name is Vance, and he said he got bullied on the playground when he was a kid. And so he and his friends formed a little gang to get after the bullies and to just keep up to protect themselves. And the bullies grew and they grew and their tactics got worse, so their tactics got worse and everybody got worse and worse. And his little gang from the playground eventually got absorbed into the Crips. You guys have heard of the Crips, right? I'm sure there are some gangs in of Italy's own, right? I'm sure. Well, I started thinking about that, how bullying was the root of the life of pain that this boy and that so many others, that was the story of so many of these kids. And I started thinking about the saying, hurt people, and healed people, heal people, and how true that is. And I started thinking about the nature of conflict and injustice. And I started to think, at Homeboy, these guys, the Crips and Bloods, people who would have previously killed each other for fun, are now baking bread together and now sweeping the floor together, and they become like brothers. And I saw this with my own eyes. I was part of it for years. And the redemption is real. And who knows what they had been through in the past, how their family killed somebody from their family and all of this. And they let it all go because they realize that what's important is not retribution, but in drawing the line and saying it ends with me and I'm going to live with kindness and peace and inclusion. Not an easy thing to do when it's your life, but they do it. And I thought, my gosh, if they can do it, then so can the rest of the world, right? And so I was thinking about that heavily, and I would go to these Comic-Cons on the weekends, and we celebrate these billion-dollar properties, right? We celebrate Wonder Woman with, you know, oh my God, how many, like, 300 million dollars on the budget of some of these movies, more? It's ridiculous. And they celebrate these epic battles where the good guys win and all that, and then I go and work with these people during the week. They couldn't afford food. And largely it was because they'd made some bad choices, yes, but also because they grew up in the wrong neighborhood. And they made some bad choices, but they didn't have much of a head start. So anyway, about that time, I heard about a little girl named Katie, who was bullied for loving Star Wars. She's 6 years old, and all the boys were following her around at school, saying, "You can't like Star Wars, you're a girl." Well, what do you think, ladies? It was ridiculous. So little Katie was, she went home and she cried. She told her mother, "I'm not going to like Star Wars anymore. I'm just going to carry my pink lunchbox." Elisabetta, are you here? Okay. This is not okay. So she said, and her mother, Carrie Goldman, said, "Katie, you get to be who you are. You can like anything you want. You can love anyone you want. You can be who you are." But Katie was depressed, so Carrie put the word out on her blog saying, "If any of you have been gender bullied or bullied for any reason, would you say a few words of encouragement to my daughter?" And the post went viral. Thousands of people responded. I was one of hundreds of people that sent a message to them. But publicly I said, "Katie, you get to be who you are." I kept in touch with Carrie and her mother, and that's when it all came together in my head, saying, there's so many people like Katie who are bullied just for being who they are, and this isn't right. And if people at Homeboy can set aside their histories and differences, then why don't we make a real effort to do something, to teach inclusion, using, I don't know if this is making any sense, but using the popularity of these stories. You know, you go to Comic-Con and there's 300,000 people. These stories are, you know, they're the highest grossing stories in the history of entertainment. They're doing something right. What is it? They're talking about heroism. They're talking about the good guys winning. Well, let's be those good guys. So that's a very roundabout way of saying what we're doing with Pop Culture Hero Coalition. And I'm grateful. We have, here's my sales pitch. We have t-shirts out there that say, "Be kind." And those t-shirts are a lot of what funds our work. In 2015, I was doing a convention a lot like this in Connecticut on the East Coast of the U.S., and one of the women in the audience came up to me afterwards, and she said, "You should work with Yale." And I said, "Yeah, right. Have them call me." She said, "No, really. Let me put you in touch." So she put us in touch with Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence, and about 2 months later, we partnered with them on an event. And at that time, the director of Yale Center for Emotional Intelligence, an incredible psychologist who does a lot of this type of work, he said, "You should do this work in schools because you have an inroad to kids' minds and hearts to teach empathy and resilience and inclusion and healthy conflict resolution and healthy identity and all of those important things. You have these stories that people will listen to." And so that's what we did. So in 2013, 15, we started putting this curriculum together. We finished it in 2019. We were going to pilot it. Start to distribute it widely. When? In March 2020. So obviously we couldn't do any work during the pandemic in schools or in conventions. So we pivoted our work to do the heroic journey at home. And this is so exciting. Because we knew that, I said that wrong, but I'm grateful to be able to say this. Because we knew how hard hit everywhere was with this pandemic, we had the curriculum adapted for at home, available free of charge on our website, and translated into Italian and German. And I'm grateful to have been able, Flora, I knew you were busy with other things, but I have a few Italian friends that could translate, and we did. And so there's some wonderful things, like, I'm really getting off the subject, but it's not off, it's on the subject. It's humanity, right? So we have these incredible lesson plans, like managing family conflict, and when social distancing becomes social isolation, and all of these are important things, and they're available in Italian on our website if you'd like to see. It's popculturehero.org. So, boy, that was a lot. thank you. Okay, one thing I'd like to say very briefly about this, finally, about the curriculum, it's called The Heroic Journey, and we started to put together these videos, and my absolutely amazing, wonderful boyfriend, Matthew Worley, was the cinematographer for these videos that are really well done, beautifully shot, and with beautiful sound, and Matthew is responsible for that. So thank you, Matthew, for your work. Did I go over? That's my question. Yes.
I was wondering if you've ever speculated or thought about, after you became the first lady of Marengamar, how the culture changed with Ramadan.
As the Grand Nagus? Yes. Yes, actually, I have thought a lot about that, and about 20 minutes before this panel, somebody texted me saying, we'd like to put together a reboot of Deep Space Nine, which isn't going to happen. But they said, how would you feel about that? Would you like to be a part? And I said, yes. And they're talking about it being Ram and Leela having created social justice on Ferenginar, so that Ferenginar is not just about money, but it's about social justice. And then they were deposed because it was too much social justice for the Ferengi. But in answer to your question, yes, I think that is what Leela and Ram are doing on Ferenginar, is creating a fair world and have it not just be about Latinum. Although Leela might be monetizing a little, maybe she has a store named Leela's Secret, like Victoria's Secret. But I think Ferenginar is a whole other world with us on board. At the helm. Who else? Thank you, Eric. Who else? Yes. Oh, The Flash, yeah. I was grateful to do one episode of The Flash. The role was written for me by Andrew Kreisberg, the executive producer, who knew my work as Leela and just wrote the role, and it was really nice. I had a good time working with Jesse Martin and Cisco, Carlos Valdez. They're wonderful cast members. I think it's a really good show. It was fun to do. Thank you. Did you enjoy it? Thank you. It was fun. Yeah. Thank you. Who else? Yes. Yes.
Character you were not
Yeah. Well, I wish that Lita had been a little grittier, had more opportunity to do things that really mattered, because Deep Space Nine was a pretty heavy show, and there could have been room for that. They kept me as more of a lighthearted comic relief for the most part, which was a bit of a frustration for me on one hand, but on the other hand, they had so many characters to do so much with. I was just grateful for the screen time that we had. So yeah, sure, there can be that feeling of, can't we do this? But I'm not the writer. But I respect them a great deal. I think our show is so beautifully written, no complaints. Hi, Flora. Thank you. I love being a host. I think it's really wonderful to get to be curious about people in public and to ask them questions and be able to introduce fine talent. And I'm grateful that I've been able to be the host at some wonderful events. I did host FedCon a few times. Do you know FedCon? It's a crazy huge convention in Germany. That was lots of fun. I hosted some things on the Star Trek cruise, which is fun. One really exciting thing that I got to host in 2019 was Starmoose, which is an astrophysics space music festival. And they had an incredible lineup, and I got to introduce Brian May. I know. It was wonderful. And Brian Eno was part of that event. And I know, it was crazy. It really was surreal being backstage and on stage with these people. Brian Eno, Ian McDonald had mentioned the Long Now Foundation, and Brian is part of that. And I also got to introduce Hans Zimmer on stage. And then Hans did a concert on that same night. Brian sang. It was crazy electric, amazing. Steve Vai is also an incredible guitarist who performed. And then Commander Chris Hadfield, who had been up on the International Space Station. He's the one, he sang Major Tom to Ground Control from the ISS. He played that. And played guitar, and it's all these incredible people that were there, plus the astronauts. Many of the living astronauts from the heyday in the 60s, including Buzz Aldrin, were there. Yeah, it was pretty wild. If you ever have a chance to go to Starmoose, it's an incredible event, and not as well known as you think it would be, but the intersection of science, space, and music, anyway. So, yes, in Armenia, in the fall. Yeah, I gotta get on that. Huh? We hope, yeah, I know. So anyway, I don't mean to, the main convention that I should be talking about is my favorite, which is DeepCon. And Flora has done such a beautiful job of having this be such a home, such a hub, a warm, welcoming, lovely place for people to come. I love this convention because the mark of a great convention is when people come not to see us, but to see each other. And that's the family feeling of fun and love and friendship that you feel here. And it takes a very special person, her, to organize that type of thing, and a very special team. Flora, I want to say thank you very, very much for creating that in DeepCon and in EuroCon and having this beautiful gathering and family. Wrap it up. How to what? How to get to Brian? How to what?
How to have
Brian May here. Oh, I know. Yeah, that'd be nice. But really, Flora and Gabby and everybody here on the team, thank you all. You guys are exemplary. Thank you again for having me here. If anybody If anybody would like to support the work that the Coalition does, again, part of our work is online for free in Italian, and then we do a lot of other work.
There are t-shirts
outside that say, "Be kind," a wonderful message for a great cause. We also have masks with the Italian flag, "Be kind," go check them out, and buttons. So I would truly love and appreciate your support of our work. And again, thank you so much for having me here, Flora.
No, thank you, Lolita. Sì, Lolita. Because I was thinking of Lita, and I said, Lolita. Okay, so now, as you have seen, I think Chase is really a wonderful person, because we all know that some actors sometimes are really posh, and they think they are, you know, idols. I'm not going to say any name, only a surname, Shatner. So, you know that your job is to entertain people, which is amazing, and I think it's absolutely important, especially in a moment like the one we all went through, with people stuck at home, television, and especially television, I think, became something really, really huge. Yeah. So your role in life is important, and you know that. But you also are one person who understand that if somebody goes on the International Space Station or saves a life because, you know, he's a doctor or something, it's a different role. I mean, not that your role is less important, but it's not brain surgery. We talk about that, so that's not something that many of your colleagues understand.
But it's also, if I may, it's also, and I agree with Flora, absolutely, and it's also not just about being a brain surgeon or on the ISS, it's all of us having whatever jobs we have, because that's the way the world works. We wouldn't be able to do anything without each other. We wouldn't have these chairs and the guy who put this flooring down and the girl who cleans, you know, the guy who cleans up at night. We wouldn't have anything if it weren't for each other. So all of our jobs should be equally respected. Everyone should be signing autographs, you know, really. I think that's the kind of that's the way we need to see the world.
I know, but again, not all your colleagues are like that. So believe me, Eric is laughing. We are thinking at the same person, as I think. So Chase, really, thank you so much, because I think you were really the perfect actor guest for this convention, being Eurocon especially. And I'm pretty sure that some of the other countries now would love to have you too.
They don't have actors, and that's okay.
They don't have actors, but if they have, get in touch with me. And thank you very much again. Thank you for being such a wonderful person. And thank you for bringing Matthew here. Really, thank you so much. He's so lovely.
I know. For once, I have a decent boyfriend. But not only decent, he's wonderful.
Okay, you said so, but I second the motion. So thank you very much. By the way, Matthew, a lot of girls here ask me if you have a brother, twin brother or something. So, thank you very much. And now there will be an autograph session with all the guests of honor, so please sit here. I just remember that there are some photos of Chase for sale. We do not have any McDonald's books, so I think everyone brought there, so I have one mine. So, and Eric's photos too are on sale. And then after we will have dinner. After dinner there will be the two Italian awards, Cassiopeia and Cittadella, very brief, I promise. Then the Premio Italia, the Italian awards, quite briefly. And then the European awards. So we'd really love for, of course, our guests to be present and give the awards. And then after that, the costume contest with the jury, which will be Chase, Matthew, Eric, and Deborah. No?
Matthew, I didn't ask you yet. Will you be one of the judges, please? Sorry. I was going to ask you. I'm sorry.
It's my fault.
Say yes.
I was sure. You know that once when Sid came here.
Look, I finally got a good boyfriend. Don't,
yeah, no,
don't
lose
make
him
away. No, you don't lose him.
Don't lose him. Don't lose. You know that once Sid was here, Alexander Siddig was here, and I just went and asked him, please, would you like to be the judge of a costume contest? I mean, you're not obliged to do it, but yes, of course. And then Lolita came to me and said, Sid is judging the costume contest. Never does that. How did you manage to?
You.
I asked.
All right. Thank you so much again,
Flora. No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache della galassia, da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafidi, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof Massimo De Santo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it, su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity. Se siete particolarmente timidi, potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@fantascientificas.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificas.it. Se volete, potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal utilizzando l'apposito pulsante sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale. Non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. Autorizzazione SIAE 5612I5359. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Alexa 4 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Settimo simbolo inserito nel computer. Blocco 1 pronto. Blocco 1 posizionato.
Potenza erogata 23%. Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
Arme rosse, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Chiudete l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigatevi.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì. Mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
75%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Non eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
Blocco 7 è pronto.
Pronto, attivato.
Blocco 7 è posizionato.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.